You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. Already been like 5 years. I mean, I feel like there's this calendar marker of whenever Adam Sandler goes, you know what, maybe I'm actually going to try to act in a movie that's good.
I thought it was at least once a decade.
Yeah, it's at least once a decade, but I want to say it's like 5 years.
I think what he does is he looks at his bank account and he goes, oh, I got enough money now. Yeah. I can do something else without having to worry about getting a big payday
out
of it.
Well, that dude's got enough money for the rest of his life. Yeah. I mean, I say what you will about Sandler, and I certainly think that the bulk of his movies are absolute just garbage, dumpster fires. But he is a talented person. He just doesn't have much interest in showing it most of the time. And he's also apparently famously one of the nicest guys in all of Hollywood.
His Netflix special just infuriates me. I'm like, you're this brilliant all the time. Like, anytime you want, you could just be this brilliant.
I've heard that's great.
It's fantastic.
Well, JC and I saw this when the Sefty brothers were present, and they did a little Q&A afterwards, and they talked about this is a movie they've been wanting to do for a long time. And, you know, part of the problem is just, like, scheduling Sandler because he's so busy and just trying to get to meet him. And, you know, of course, they tell him, you know, they tell everybody, oh, he's the nicest guy you'll ever meet, blah, blah, blah. And it occurred to me while sitting through that, I'm thinking, maybe Adam Sandler rarely appears in good movies for the simple reason that maybe nobody asks him. I mean, maybe that's the key. Maybe he's like, well, no one's asked me to do a movie this month, so I guess I'll just call my buddies and we'll go to, like, Tahoe and we'll just spend a weekend and just make a movie while we're there.
Part of it is just, like, he's too worried his friends are going to be bankrupt and living on the street if it wasn't for him, which, quite frankly, the bulk of them probably would be.
I mean, you know, Rob Schneider only has a house because of Adam Sandler.
Oh, no, there's no, absolutely no question. No one would be casting him except Adam Sandler. And Rob Schneider does not have hidden depths, as near as I can tell, to pull off performances.
He must have some incriminating video or something on Sandler.
Sandler's just one of those guys, like, man, those are the people he came up with, and he just doesn't forget his friends. And what are you going
to
do?
To a fault.
I think the man makes a lot of terrible movies, but you can't fault him as a human being, or at least not anything I've seen. Now, the movie we're talking about is not The Special, which I have not seen, but I fully intend on it, but Uncut Gems, as you said, directed by Josh and Benny Safdie, who really blew me away last year or the year before. With their film Good Time, starring Robert Pattinson, who, once again, an actor that was being very underrated by the public at large. And although he had already proved to me he was certainly much more than what he showed in Twilight, this was like cemented him as an actor that had massive chops.
And
working on a film that was like very dark and very upsetting, and apparently, like all of Josh and Benny Safdie's films, about a person with absolutely zero impulse control that falls into a miasmic pit of self-destruction.
They're really movies about deeply flawed, frankly, unlikable characters who just make one series of bad decisions after another, each time making a bad decision that creates another terrible consequence. And then rather than doing, you know, the obvious thing, they just double down and go into even crazier schemes to get out of the hole they just dug themselves into. That's, you know, a lot of people I've been hearing are saying that this is like one of the tensest movies they've seen all year long. I don't know if I felt that way about it. I actually prefer Good Time a little bit more.
I do too.
But this is a hell of a ride, and it is strongly anchored by Adam Sandler, who is the least likable he has ever been anything.
And I mean, that includes like Grown Ups too.
Yeah,
exactly. but least likable in the way that you're supposed to not like him. Right. He plays Howard Ratner, who is a New York City jeweler who is runs a store that he's got a connection through Lake Heath Stanfield, who is sort of his connection to the stars, like up and coming hip hop artists and NBA players and stuff, where he's like, oh man, this guy, he's got the best bling. You got to come see him. And so he brings these high profile people in to buy stuff from him. And with a certain degree of like, oh, I'll help you out. You help me out. Right. The problem is that Ratner has a just crippling gambling addiction.
Yeah.
And he's also just not a good guy. Like, he has a wife and kids, but he's also got a kept mistress who works with him as well. Yeah. And what is her name?
Julia Fox.
Yeah, Julia Fox, who works at the store, and then he keeps her in a really nice apartment, and that he's having an affair.
He also has this sideline where, for like celebrities and stars, one of whom is Kevin Garnett, the basketball player, who surprisingly is not only playing himself but giving a solid performance in this. But he has this sideline where he provides security for gems and things. So he'll lock up your stuff in a safe. Unbeknownst to his clients, he will then walk across the street to another jeweler, take a loan off of it, and then go and gamble on that. Always thinking, well, I'm going to win, and then I'll go back, and I'll get it out of pawn, and I'll put it back in the safe, and no one will be, no one will be the wiser.
That's what sports gamblers do. It's okay.
Yeah. Is it, though?
And this is one of the things that I hate to see, both in real life and even in fictional characters, are characters who are so deluded. They have this really strongly misplaced optimism that, the next one is going to be the one
that breaks me out of all this.
And yet they never, ever take any responsibility. It's not my fault this happened. It's not my fault the guy missed the shot. It's not my fault the guy didn't show up at the right time. And you realize just how frustrating human beings are like this. And if you've ever met someone who's even remotely like this, you want to punch them in the mouth. And fortunately, you get to see that happen to Adam Sandler more than once.
And when we meet him, he's already deep in the shit. He owes a lot of money to his brother-in-law, played by Eric Bogosian, who himself is kind of a heavy and has his own heavies who he works with who are even heavier than he is.
Yeah. he also has gotten into some bad shit that he perhaps should not have gotten into. And he owes money to everybody, and he ends up sucking all of his friends and family into this horrible caper over the course of like a couple of nights.
He's just running from one like thing to the next of trying to like avoid some people, trying to like placate some people, trying to like taking things, pawning it, and putting on a game in the hope that that's going to be one, then he can get it back and have the money to pay someone else. And at the same time, he's got this uncut, like,
it's an opal.
Opal.
It's enormous.
That's really big, that he got from the blood mines in Africa.
Illegally smuggled into the country, because, of course, even his dreams are founded on crimes.
And he's determined that he can make this auction that's coming up, and he can sell it for a huge amount of money. The problem is, when the said athlete, Kevin Garnett, shows up, he's there when this thing shows up, falls madly in love with it, and it's like, look, man, literally, just, I got such good vibes off this, just let me borrow it. I will bring it back tomorrow. Because
there's like a championship game, and he thinks it's his good luck charm.
Right, and sure enough, he plays the best game he's played in months, and is convinced that this is indeed a good luck charm. And Adam Sandler finds himself in a position where he doesn't want to intimidate this guy, because, he's this rich, famous NBA player, and he's actually genuinely a fan as a big sports guy, but also really has to get this fucking thing back well before the auction even starts.
Yeah, and all of this, and Lakeith Stanfield is kind of his, like we said, it's a sort of his broker and go-between. He's like, I need to get that opal back. He's like, oh yeah, I'm going to talk to him. Totally going to talk to him. Oh, well, we'll meet you there at a certain time. Oh wait, he's not going to make it. He had to go and do this other thing. And the whole time all this is happening, he is trying desperately to get this opal back, because you know what? You probably shouldn't lend really expensive things to people you just met.
No. General, I don't care how famous they are.
Yeah. They're too busy for you. And yeah, it that is one of the frustrating things, where you're just like, just give it back to him, guys. Come on. You've already broken the deal. But again, it is a situation, and time and time again throughout the film, no matter how many times you come close to feeling bad for him, but every time you just go, damn, he brought this on himself.
He gets himself into these little moments where you're like, ah, you have actually put yourself in a position where you can buy yourself some time. You've gotten some money. You can stop this bad thing from happening. But he just every single time turns and goes, no, this next bet is the one.
Right. Now I can stake myself on an even bigger gamble. And I mean, what I'm making it sound kind of repetitive here. But that is kind of what happens. It is just a man over the course of several days just getting into one worse deal after another.
It wasn't for the sheer franticness of the film, the speed in which all this stuff is happening. Then this could have been kind of dull instead, quite frankly. Like, okay, we've seen stuff kind of dealing with these sort of things. But the Safdie brothers bring this real energy to it. And they let Sandler, basically for a lot of the movie, play this version of Sandler, certainly not completely unfamiliar, but that is so heightened and such a unbelievable prick that you're just like kind of mesmerized by him. Now, a lot of people are talking about this as like one of the best performances of the year. And I actually had very mixed feelings about that because I think it is a solid performance, but I don't think it's a ridiculously huge stretch for Sandler.
No, it's not out of his wheelhouse.
No, it's not unlike characters he's actually played in the way he plays this character. I mean, he's kind of putting on an affectation and a voice for this. I mean, it's a role that you could
leaning into the Jewishness. Let's just say that.
Really leaning into it. Yeah. And you could easily see this start to turn into comedy. And it never really does. There are some lightly funny moments in it.
It has comic energy, but nothing very funny is happening.
Yeah. Exactly correct.
That's where the strength of it lies in its franticness and the tension that it generates. You mentioned things that are really similar. It's sort of the polar opposite of the movie The Gambler, which also dealt with a sports gambler with Mark Wahlberg, and it was a remake of another movie. But that movie was really slow paced and really methodical, and this... Yeah, I don't think Sandler's performance was particularly great just because the strength of it is built on the tension. The tension comes from, you have scenes where there's 7-8 people in a room and they're all talking over each other, and it's just, it's a lot of stimuli hitting you at once, like throughout the entire
thing. It feels claustrophobic at times, like everything's closing in. He's in the diamond shop and the basketball players are over there and they're talking and haggling over prices, and meanwhile his brother-in-law and his heavies have walked in and his girlfriend's behind the counter going, hey, your wife's on line one. And, oh, by the way, you got to go see Judd Hirsch, who's your dad or your father-in-law, whatever. It's you feel like the guy is constantly beset. And in any other scenario, like I said, you'd feel sorry for him. And I'm like, dude, you did this to yourself.
Yeah, it's his bed and he's finally having to sleep in it.
Exactly. Over and over and over again. And if you've seen Good Night, and I thought very highly of that film, not only this is very similar to Good Night in that regards, in that they bring that same kind of energy, but they obviously have a bigger budget, they have a bigger star, they have a lot more ambition. Visually and musically, they've always done really solid work, and you really see that. It's just a really sharp, vivid portrayal of a city at night, New York in particular. But unlike Goodnight, if you sat through the end credits, there's actually a glimmer of hope in that.
No glimmer
there's
of hope
no
here.
There's no hope in this.
This just gets darker and darker and darker and more fucked up, and it does not end well.
I mean, nobody really gets out of this clean, and you know it's all going to go bad, and you just don't know to what degree and when it's going to go bad. But boy, does it ever.
Yeah, very true. The weirdest thing is, much as this is a movie I genuinely enjoyed watching, and I think technically its aspects are very meritorious, I don't know how much to say about it.
Yeah.
You know, there's scenes that I can call out as being very distinctive. Like, there's a sequence at a nightclub that he goes to, presumably to pick up the opal from like Keith Stanfield, that stars The Weeknd as a hip hop
as playing himself.
That goes into some pretty that goes into a weird, unexpected place for him as he sees that his girlfriend is actually there at the club, and he thinks possibly fooling around on him, and it gets into a very intense scene that certainly is a standout moment in this film. And in and of itself, despite it's a nightclub, it's incredibly claustrophobic.
Yeah,
like everywhere this guy goes feels closed in
and all very neon. Lit. It's sort of like this, it's like a neon hellscape that he's wandering through. And I think Goodnight pulled off something similar.
Yeah.
In that New York at night can be very romantic. It can be exciting. It can feel dangerous. This particular version of New York at night is claustrophobic, you know, like JC was saying, and it's tense and it's uncomfortable, and there's no romance to it. You know, most New York filmmakers seem to be in love with New York.
No.
Except for the ones who just say, yes, we live here, we love it, but this place is horrible.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's kind of what this movie does.
It has a certain feel like that reminds me of Scorsese's After Hours, but yes, without the sort of like wacky comedy moments. Like
no Cheech and Chong to come in and add some levity.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. But like that, like the city, we love it. We love it and we hate it in equal measures.
Right.
But the city is a character in and of itself, but it's not important to the story in and of itself.
Yeah.
It's like just adds to that feeling of claustrophobia. I mean, mm-hmm. Adam Sandler's in practically every frame of this film,
yeah,
and is completely the anchor of it. And like I said, as much as I am not going to give him massive critical laurels for his performance, it's exactly what the performance needs to be on the whole. I mean, I also disagree with people saying I can't picture anyone but Adam Sandler in this role. I'm like, no. Oh, I can.
You mean all the other good actors in the world who are not Adam Sandler could play this. It's just jarring because you're not used to seeing him. The most jarring part of this movie to me was actually the beginning, when we're actually starts off in Africa in a mine, and then we get these close-ups that where the camera like flies into the heart of this opal, and we have this sort of beautiful moment of like abstraction where it's like the universe is captured within this opalescent gem.
And then turns into Adam Sandler's ass.
Yeah, and then I
literally sounds like something that would happen in Grown-Ups too.
And I kept there for the first minute or two, I was like, am I in the right theater? You know, why is there no Adam Sandler? But yeah, once you get out of that hot, dusty African mine and then you're like in New York down like in the jeweler's district, then you go, okay, I know where we are now. And that I think is why it is a New York story, because it is very much around that sort of Jewish run jewelry industry that happens in parts of New York. And the Safdie brothers talked about, like, talking to some of the real jewelers, and there's a particular one whose name I'm forgetting, but very much like the Adam Sandler, is a real guy who's become, like, you know, the jeweler to the stars.
Oh, Jacob the Jeweler.
Jacob the Jeweler, that's the one. And, you know, but this is obviously not that guy, it's just a different version of it.
Because he is not a itinerant gambler?
He's probably not living the life of hell that Adam Sandler's character is. But it is specific to this world. And you go, yeah, there are people like this, you know. And that was, I thought, part of the pleasure of Goodnight as well. It was, yes, it could have happened in any city, but it has that specificity that still feels universal. And yeah, this movie does all of those things. I just wish I loved it as much as everybody else seems
to. Yeah, I'm kind of on the same page. I was like, never got the degree of charm that everyone else seemed to get from this film. I admired it. I think this is very well constructed. It is an interesting story. Sandler delivers a solid performance. Everyone delivers a solid performance. But I think there's just some degree of repetitiveness to this film crossed with this character that there's just literally nothing to like about.
Yeah.
I mean, he does not have a single positive quality.
There's almost a moment where I'm like, oh, well, he does love his kids and he misses them, but then he fucks it up.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just like, yeah, okay, he loves his kids more from the sense of like, you're supposed to.
Yeah.
You know, than any sort of like showing me that he loves his kids.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, he's just so thoroughly unlikable and just, like I said, he's an addict at rock bottom.
Yeah.
And it's just hard to watch that when you don't have any reason to care about the person.
You know that moment in Goodfellas where Ray Liotta's like breaking down and he's strung out on coke and he's trying to like take the kids to the hospital and he also has to drop them off at school, but he also has to make the spaghetti sauce. But meanwhile, there's a helicopter over his head. That little 5-minute sequence, that's this over like 2 hours.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot of variation. It's just bad to worse to worse to worse to worse.
Yep. Well, keep going to your final thoughts.
This movie was so highly touted. When we finally got to see it, I was really happy to. The Safdie brothers are undeniably extremely talented guys, but this does feel like if Goodnight, which again, as I said, I prefer, but if Goodnight was like his El Mariachi and this is their
Desperado,
it's like, it's the same idea. You just had a hell of a lot more money and a hell of a lot more ambition. But the vibe the basic structure, all the beats are kind of there from the previous film. You just made like your previous film on steroids. And I dug it. I liked it. I really will be disappointed if their next film
is the same thing.
Is just them plowing this same field again. Because otherwise, then they are one-trick ponies. But I have faith that they're not. And on their next project, they may do something stronger than this. This is
I'm rooting for Sex Addict.
There you go. You know, this is a movie that is coming out on December 25th. And I must confess,
perfect Christmas Day movie.
I think for the most misanthropic people around Christmas, this is going to be catnip for them.
Actually, this already came out.
Oh, whoa, really?
It didn't already come out. It comes out on the 13th.
Okay. Yeah. I was under the impression at one time it was a December 25th release.
Christmas time
Christmas release. But you know what? I would love the idea. For nothing else, just the perverse idea that somebody's going to go, hey, kids, it's an Adam Sandler movie. This is probably fun. I do hope people go to see this movie by accident for the wrong reasons. Yet, Darius Conji, that's who did the cinematography. I'm going to recommend this, but with reservations. Like I said, it's unrelentingly bleak and does get to be a bit repetitive. But just for sheer style alone, they really pull it off. I'm going to give this 8 out of 10 diamond-encrusted Furbies.
Maybe they should do that same thing they did when they put out Good Boys, where literally half the poster was rated R. It was like where it was like a giant, this movie like, is
no,
rated R.
Stop.
Do not bring little kids into the
movie.
Don't. JC?
I was really looking forward to this. Somebody who on occasion gambles on sports was interested in seeing this movie.
Who was that?
What?
You said somebody who occasionally
said
gambles
as somebody,
in sports.
Meaning
oh,
him.
Sorry, sorry.
Yeah.
No,
he's
I'm sorry.
Chasing that.
I thought you were talking about
some
other. Not me. No, of course not me. That's.
So yeah, I was interested in seeing that. I'm always interested when I see real life NBA players come out in a movie. It's always funny to see how usually terrible they are because they're usually playing themselves, and it's not like being in front of a camera is a new thing for them. But Kevin Garnett actually did do a pretty good job. But yeah, I think I appreciated the tension that this drew and the claustrophobic feel of it. But it doesn't make for something I'd want to revisit a lot. And I put a lot of value in things that I'd want to revisit. And like I mentioned, as a stark opposite, the Gambler. The Gambler is starring Mark Wahlberg and has a lot of really slow, nuanced performance, and it's really slow paced, and it's just really methodical, and it's almost the same story in that gambler who just keeps making wrong and wrong decisions. But like John Goodman is in it and has an excellent monologue about fuck you money, which is really cool. And yeah, this doesn't has good writing too. Like I appreciate really great writing, and this didn't have a lot of that. It seems like it's mostly built on the tension that it knows it can bring out, and for some people, that's really good. I just wanted a little bit more out of this, and so I wouldn't say I was disappointed because I definitely do appreciate what the Safdie brothers did. Just like I said, I could place more value on things I can rewatch and would rewatch. And
sure.
So I would give this maybe 6.5 out of 10 4-item parlays.
Yeah, I think we're largely on the same page here. I did think about this movie quite a bit after it was over, and it's not a movie I could see myself returning to easily and going, what, like, I want to see that again. But it's a tough watch movie, but in the way that because it's just this character is just so thoroughly unlikable, the magic here is largely its technical merits for mm-hmm. me, certainly, and I think they're deeply impressive. I think the Safdie brothers are, as I said, after a good time, ones to really watch. I don't think this is even near as good as that movie was. That film has a little bit more scope, quite frankly.
Yeah, it really does.
And more interesting scenarios. This movie is just a series of like concentric circles that are closing in on each other.
Also, that film was all about a terrible person doing despicable things, all for the purpose of saving his brother.
Right. He at least had
there was a noble goal, even though he himself was a not noble
person. He was going about it all wrong.
All wrong, but only making his brother's life worse. But here, yeah, Adam Sandler starts off selfish and ends selfish.
And it's hard to enjoy a movie like that for me. I think this is a very good movie, but that overall, but it's one that just wasn't aimed at my tastes overall. I'm going to give it 7 out of 10 really closer shots of Adam Sandler's ass than I ever, ever wanted to see. And we've seen a lot of shots of his ass over his career. So I'm telling you, it's so close. It's internal.
You'll see stars in it.
Yes, you will.